This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
All right, I think I hacked in.
We're on the air?
Shh, security's outside.
But how's my hair?
It's a radio station.
Psst. Psst. You guys hear about the Beyond the Shadows podcast with Ryan and Scott?
You guys into paranormal?
What about true crime?
How about UFOs and cryptids?
We also have mad hauntings.
We got security.
No, we don't. We're not big enough to need it yet.
No, we got security.
Hey, what are you guys doing? Get out of here! Listen to the Beyond the Shadows podcast.
Beyond the Shadows!
Hey, fellow truth seekers, I'm Justin.
And I'm Brandy. And together, we'll be your guides on this spine-tingling journey through the unknown.
We dive headfirst into the eerie realms of cryptids, from Bigfoot to Loch Ness Monster.
And hold on tight, because we'll explore spine-chilling encounters with extraterrestrial beings and UFO sightings that will leave you questioning what's really out there.
Beyond the Shadows is not your average paranormal podcast. Our goal is simple. To shed light on the shadows that haunt our world and confront the unexplained with an open mind.
And for the skeptics, don't worry, we have something for you too. Our conspiracy theories will challenge your beliefs and make you question everything. So, if you're fascinated by the paranormal, yearn for chilling true crime stories, or crave the adrenaline rush of uncovering conspiracies,
join us on this hair-raising adventure as we journey beyond the shadows.
Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us again for some brutal, bizarre stories and a boozy cocktail. How are you doing, yeah. Declan?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. What story do you have for us today?
Today, I am going to be talking about the 2022 Brinks truck robbery.
Oh, I do love a good robbery. Well,
oh, yeah. I'm surprised I've never heard of this with it being so recent. Like,
yeah. Cool.
What story do you have for us today, Mom?
I have an old serial killer that was convicted of 4 murders, but there very possibly could be more. And his name is Joseph Naso.
Old as in old age or old as in happened a while ago?
Well, a little bit of both. A little bit of both. We'll get into it. For the drink, because it's an old person and an old story and an old everything, I brought the old fashioned cocktail. And
I'm surprised we haven't done this yet.
I am surprised too. And it's a pretty, I mean, it's a very basic.
Hopefully I made it right.
They're delicious.
Because it's specific the way you have to make it, right?
Kind of. It's very, very basic. I mean, the thing is that you can get almost anything and put them together and it's an old fashioned. Like you can go to any restaurant and it's going to be slightly different on how the old fashioned tastes. So we're going to do a million different recipes out there. I found one that looked good to me and it is 1 to 2 teaspoons of simple syrup, 3 dashes of orange bitters, 2 ounces of bourbon, garnish with an orange peel and cherries. The instructions are to combine your simple syrup, bitters, and whiskey in a rocks glass and stir well with ice. Then add 1 to 2 large ice cubes and using a bar spoon or a long spoon to stir a few more times to chill. So I've seen instructions where you use more syrup, you use less syrup, you use different kinds of orange peel or lemon peel or plain bitters or different kinds of bitters. Whatever you got, put it in there. Stir it around. It's going to be delicious. And that's another reason why I chose this drink, because our last, I don't know, seems like last 12 to 15 drinks, maybe not that many.
It's not been great.
Have been god awful, terrible, don't want to drink it, barely want to sip it, and then throw it out. So this drink, I know it's good, and it's going to be tasty. Are you ready to give our drink a try?
Let's give it a try.
Delicious, as I knew it would be. You're not a fan? You're making a face.
Everyone hypes it up so much that I thought it would be better. But, I mean, it's okay. It's not bad.
It's a very easy drink and basic. And depending on, it's going to be better or not as good depending on the bourbon that you use or the whiskey that you use. And depending on if you use a lot of bitters or how much syrup you use. I used a little bit more syrup because I like mine sweeter. You can do whatever you want with it. That's another reason it's a good drink, because you can do whatever you want and it's tasty. And I'm going to finish mine because it's delicious. Regardless of that, though.
Sorry if I seem distracted today. My fucking name, I don't know what they're doing over there. They're making so much. Sounds like they're having a goddamn dodgeball fight. Oh.
I don't hear anything.
Okay, good.
So
I hear it though. It's bugging me.
Yeah. It would be distracting. I don't hear anything, so it's not coming over the mic at least.
Okay. I just watched him drive away. I don't know what's happening over there, but it's driving me fucking nuts.
Oh.
Sorry. Let's get into your story.
No worries. Joseph Naso was born January 7, 1934 in Rochester, New York. He grew up in the Rochester area. He also served in the Air Force in the 1950s. In the 1950s, he met his wife, Judith. Not sure if that was before or after he was in or out of the military, but regardless, they met in the 1950s. Naso and Judith had a son, Charles. The marriage lasted for 18 years, but the two stayed friendly, even though they had gotten divorced, possibly due to their mutual child, who eventually had been diagnosed with schizophrenia. Judith lived in the San Francisco Bay Area, and Naso would often visit her and Charles there. He also moved to the Bay Area himself, although he would move to different cities often and eventually settled in Reno, Nevada. He was a photographer who enjoyed sports activities with his son and the son's friends. Naso had a criminal past as well. He was arrested for sexual assault in 1958 and sentenced to probation. Another incident occurred in 1961, but the charges were eventually dropped. So Mr. Naso is not that nice of a neighbor and guy.
He did and his it, neighbor? Is that?
He gets worse. No, he's just he's just not a nice guy. These weren't the only types of crimes that he would commit, though. He was arrested on more than one occasion for theft. He really liked stealing women's lingerie. Particularly lingerie, like not, women's underwear. Just lingerie.
Oh, okay.
I think he was, I don't think there was anything specific. He just was stealing women's stuff. Okay. Naso was shoplifting throughout his whole life and into his 60s, which, in my opinion, you shouldn't be doing it all. But, I mean, at what point do you go, maybe I shouldn't be a shoplifter anymore. I am 60 years old. But apparently, this guy thought it was still okay. These charges led him to being placed on probation, which is what ultimately brought law enforcement attention to his to him in a gigantic way. I mean, the theft, yeah, law enforcement knew about, but they didn't know about all the other shit that was going on. But because he was on probation, they found out what else he had been doing. In 2010, his probation officer conducted a surprise visit at Naso's home. He is in his 70s at this point.
Ooh.
Yes. Part of the old part of our link to our cocktail. One second. Surprise home inspections were a condition of the probation. While searching the home, the probation officer found ammunition, which was a violation of his probation. When you're on probation, you're not supposed to have guns and ammunition and those kind of things. But the officer found some, and that allowed them to do a full search of his home. And they put him in jail for violating his probation. They found a lot of weird things, like women's lingerie. He was a single.
I feel like not owning ammo is a weird part of a pro. Like, I understand not owning a gun, but it's like saying you're allowed to have beer, but not the bottle opener. Like,
I see what you're saying, but if you have ammo, it's an indication that you have a gun, and you're not supposed to have a gun. Why would you have ammo if you don't have a gun?
Good point.
Yeah. Mr. Naso was single, and he didn't have a girlfriend that anyone knew about. So what's he doing with all this women's lingerie? Definitely a bit of a red flag.
Sniffing them, duh.
Well, he was doing other stuff, too, I think. He had a bunch of mannequins and parts of mannequins.
What? That's
yes.
A weird thing to have in your house.
It is. And we actually talked about mannequins in a previous episode. Well, do you remember? Gosh, I wrote it down here. It was episode, the guy was Herb Baumeister in episode 133. He was another serial killer, I believe, Indianapolis, and he had mannequins in his house. So I don't know what it is about mannequins and why these creepers have them in their homes and around, but Naso was using them for different reasons.
Why is it that, like, I feel like a majority of people think mannequins are creepy or scary? Like, why is that?
They're creepy, like, because creepers use them.
But, okay, the amount of times that mannequins are used, I feel like 90% of it is in a Kohl's or some shit. But, like, why do people inherently find them creepy? That's Because obviously people find sharks scary because people have been eaten by sharks and it's kind of worked into our DNA and shit. Look out for sharks. But mannequins are just usually used to display clothing. So why do people find them creepy? That's kind of...
I think it's the context. If you walk into a clothing store, yes, you expect to see a mannequin. But if you walk into somebody's house and there's 20 mannequins laying around posed in lingerie or I'm saying no, thank you. I got to go home. I just caught Ebola and I'm peace out, bro. I'm not playing with that game. Plus, maybe it has something to do with the fact that like it feels like 95% of people who report finding a dead body say they thought it was a mannequin until they walked up to it. And then they were like,
this podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
That's not a mannequin. It's never a mannequin. It's always a dead body.
I feel like it's so easy to tell it's a mannequin compared to a dead body. Like,
right. But again, the context. The context, yeah. Naso had, in addition to the mannequins and the lingerie, he had over 4,000 photographs, including women in bondage, and often posed next to the mannequins. So the mannequins were featured in a lot of his photographs next to women who didn't appear to be conscious and possibly even were dead in the pictures, because at least one woman had markings on her skin that experts claimed were evidence that she had died.
Oh, I don't, making snuff porn.
I don't know. And I don't know how many individual women there were in these over 4,000 photographs. He was a photographer, so it wasn't just a little hobby of his. He was actually like a paid photographer for people. But then he also had these creepy photos with what appeared to be unconscious or dead women that he posed next to the mannequins.
How do you spell this guy's name?
N-A-S-O. I assume it's Naso. Could be Naso. I don't know. I guess I should have looked that up. But I didn't. And I digress. Let's get back to this week's creeper. Officers also found Naso had two safe deposit boxes, which contain a few IDs and personal effects from multiple women. And he had news clippings from a couple of unsolved murders. Not a good look. You shouldn't have those things. The most damning thing they found in Naso's house was a journal. Naso wrote about many women who he had victimized and included location information. Although there were no names, several of the remarks in the journal were tied to places where a body had been found. The journal had a list of 10 women, and investigators believe this was his personal top 10 victims. Ugh. Yeah, ugh is right. Based on the information Naso had written, they were able to link him to four specific victims from the 1970s and 1990s in the Bay Area.
Was he?
This is
Zodiac Killer.
No, because that was before.
Okay.
I don't think he was living there at the time, but maybe he was. I don't know. But this is 2010 when they found this information, and these deaths were unsolved from the 70s and 90s. Again, going back in old ways and back to our cocktail. These four victims also had an interesting connection in that their names were alliterative names with matching initials of their first and last names. The victims,
so and they I'm all had gonna, the same initials?
Not from each other, but they all had first and last name starting with the same letter. So yeah, there so was Roxine Rogosh, Carmen Colon, Pamela Parsons, and Tracy Tafoya.
Oh, so the first and last were matching. Okay.
Yes. Of okay. each victim.
That's
the names?
That's so weird. That's such a weird, like, serial killer reason. What the fuck?
Yes. But he's not the only one that did that. So we'll talk about that in a minute. The names led Naso being nicknamed as the double initial killer. It is believed that Naso drugged the women, tied them up, posed them, and photographed them before killing them and disposing of their bodies in remote locations. He was brought to trial in California for the four murders in 2013. But remember, these were cold cases from decades before, so not much of the evidence presented was from actual, like, you know, they didn't have a lot of DNA and things like that, but they were linking him based on his journal. So a lot of the evidence presented was his notations in the journal. He claimed the writings were exaggerations and that he never raped or killed anyone, even though he wrote the word rape on several occasions. So he's writing in his journal, this girl raped her and did this. But then when asked about it, he's like, oh, I was exaggerating. I was fantasizing. I was writing fictional stuff. I didn't really do any of those things.
I don't know why serial killers keep, like, documents of the, like,
right?
You could have easily used, like, code words.
Yeah.
Like,
I
boggles my it's mind. Every wild. Time. They all have, like, sentimental I know. Or,
yeah.
or, like, keychains and shit they take or whatever.
Something.
Like,
the physical descriptions from the journal were similar to the victims, as well as the location descriptions being similar to where the bodies were found. There was some physical evidence on two of the victims that linked Naso. One victim had pantyhose around her neck that contained Naso's ex-wife's DNA.
Was Another it his victim ex-wife? Had. That, was that the his, victim?
No, like, that was not the victim.
Oh,
he took his ex-wife's pantyhose.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then, yeah. Another Jesus. Victim had a partial DNA sample under her fingernails, and Naso was included as a potential match. But because it wasn't a full DNA sample, it was only partial, he was not excluded from being a partial match. He was... Does that make sense? So they were like, yeah. It could be a bunch of people and he would be in that pool of a bunch of people. We're not kicking him out. He could potentially be the guy.
Okay.
Based on all of that information, parcel match and those things and all of his journal entries, he was convicted of the four murders and sentenced to death. However, as we've discussed before, California does not enforce the death penalty, and they haven't for decades. Although there were over 4,000 pictures found in Naso's possession and journal entries beyond the four identified women, he was not charged with any additional murders. Investigators do believe he had many more victims and linked him at least to one other body.
Naso maintained his innocence publicly, but a fellow inmate claims that Naso confessed to him that he had over 20 victims. Naso was considered a person of interest in the Alphabet murders that took place in Rochester, New York during the 1970s. These were murders that the victims also had alliterative names. So they had their first and last initials matching each other. They ruled him out because he was not a DNA match, but he did live there at the time. So they were thinking this guy probably did it, but he didn't do it. At the time of recording this episode, he is 91 years old and still in prison and hasn't died yet of his own natural causes.
That's crazy. Have we covered many other, like, old, because I'm trying to think, like, it's such a weird thing to go into prison at that late of an age. Like,
yeah,
the only one I'm thinking of that we covered was Whitey Bulger, and he was in a fucking wheelchair when he went in there.
So, yeah, I don't think we typically, I can't think of any others that we've done where they were that old. Yeah. Especially, I mean, I think we've done one or two where they got caught on a cold case from like familial DNA and stuff like that, but not when they were in their 70s.
No.
It's wild.
It must be a weird thing to know that, I mean, being that old, you'd die in prison if you got a 5-year sentence, but it's 20 to 25. Right. Like,
yeah. He's still kicking it at 91 years old.
I and think still just supposedly asked for death penalty.
Right? I mean, I don't want to hang out like, there. I'm good.
You're going to need hospice care, and I'm guessing the guards aren't going to change your diapers. Give you sponge baths, right? And shit like that. But
no, weird. I wouldn't think so. I would not think so. Well, tell us about this robbery. I love a good robbery.
Again, I'm surprised I never heard of this in like the news, but
yeah, that's fairly recent.
Yeah, being 3 years ago, a little over 3 years ago now, but on July 11th, 2022, in the small town of Lebec, a place where most people know it as a truck stop off Interstate I-5, I guess that's redundant. Interstate means I-5. But anyways, these thieves pulled off one of the largest jewelry heists in U.S. history.
A Brinks truck transporting
jewels. California, I believe.
Okay.
A Brinks truck transporting jewels, gold, and luxury watches from a jewelry show in the Bay Area to another in Pasadena was quietly raided while parked at a Flying J gas station.
Ooh.
Which is just crazy to me that you get robbed at like a pilot.
Right.
The thieves made off with between $10 million and $100 million, depending on who you ask.
And oh my God. Itself
became part of the controversy. So.
Well.
Before we get into the timeline of the heist, it helps to understand that the world in which this crime took place. The robbery traces back to the International Gem and Jewelry Show, an event held in early July 2022 in San Mateo, California. These shows are a huge deal in the jewelry world. Like dozens, sometimes hundreds of vendors gather in hotel ballrooms or convention centers to showcase their goods. Diamonds, emeralds, sapphires, gold chains, platinum earrings, high-end watches, anything you can think of that's worth a lot of money. Very precious, a lot of precious metals and gems and shit.
Yeah.
Some of the vendors are major dealers, but many are small family-run businesses that travel show to show And for them, the merchandise they bring can represent their entire life savings and decades of work.
Right.
Because the merchandise is so valuable, and because vendors rarely want to fly commercial with millions of dollars in their suitcases, they contract armored transport companies like Brinks to move the goods from show to show. Which, yeah.
Totally makes sense.
You would not check a bag with millions of dollars worth of diamonds and gold. I guess TSA is going to fucking lose that shit.
Well, plus, I think you're not supposed to have anything over a certain dollar amount.
Oh, you can only declare a certain luggage. Amount in your luggage.
Yeah. But I had never thought about there being like shows, like a jewelry show like that,
yeah,
and
like
how they would transport
like
the stuff around. Yeah. Never even occurred to me that they did things like that.
Because, well, you wouldn't think that like a Hyatt in New Jersey would have billions of dollars worth of like jewelry vendors coming on a random Saturday. Like,
no,
that seems like the least.
Could you?
That seems like a place you wouldn't want to bring that stuff.
Right. The security level. I mean, there's no,
you have one dude who gets paid minimum wage and has a taser or pepper spray. That's it. Like,
I bet they have.
I'm sure they have.
Like extra,
yeah,
for sure.
Like
they hire, they probably
the guys,
all hire
yeah,
their
they
own.
Probably hire,
right. Yeah. Could you imagine just randomly being in a hotel while they were having something like that? Yeah. And I bet the security at the hotel is going to be different.
It's like, why is the room cost $200 extra dollars? And then you show up and there's like Saudi princes walking around and shit. And it's like, oh, something's happening.
Right. Right. And everybody, there's armed guards everywhere.
Yeah.
I would want an armed guard. If I had $10,000 worth of jewels, I would want an armed guard. If I had millions of dollars worth of jewels, I am getting a bunch.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Bunch of armed guards.
I'm hiring Blackwater calling up the fucking
seals. Yes. Yes, exactly. There's going to be a lot of people guarding my shit.
Yeah. So Brinks is one of the most trusted names in secure transportation. I'm sure we've all seen the armored cash trucks that go to 100%. Like grocery stores and shit. And
banks.
Big Brinks on the side. And
yep.
It's very recognizable. They've been around for over a century. And if you've ever seen them, that you can tell. It's just a...
Mm-hmm.
If you play GTA or any movie that you've seen, that there's, you know what a fucking armored Brinks truck looks like.
Right.
So in this case, after the San Mateo Jewelry Show wrapped up, Brinks loaded up 73 bags of merchandise from multiple vendors into a tractor trailer unit. And this is important. It wasn't a small armored van that we're imagining. It was a full semi truck with an armored cab and a sealed non-armored trailer. So the cab itself was armored,
but
it just had a normal semi-trailer. Which, I've never seen those. I want to see that thing. That thing probably looks like a Mad Max vehicle.
It might. But then it's, the trailer itself is not secured?
Just a normal trailer.
That seems...
Well, if you think about it, there's not supposed to be people in the trailer, but...
Yes,
so
but
the armoring is to the armoring is to protect the people that are driving the trailer. But because I'm sure all this stuff was insured for very
yes.
like a lot of amount of money, but 100%. Their armoring is for the people, but
right, because you don't want the people to get injured protecting your shit. But I also don't want to lose my shit.
You'd think you'd make it like somewhat protected. Like, I'm sure it's not the exact same as a normal semite. I'm sure they have some kind of reinforcements on it, but it wasn't like bulletproof.
Armored. Okay.
Yeah. So that truck was headed for the next stop on Jewelry Circuit, the show in Pasadena, California. So on July 10th, 2022, loading the truck, jewelers packed up their merchandise after the show. Each stand's goods went into sealed bags that were labeled, and Brinks took custody of them and loaded them into the trailer. On July 11th, the Brinks truck was driving south on Interstate 5, the main artery between Northern and Southern California. Just after 2 a.m., the truck pulled off at a Flying J truck stop in Lebec, about 80 miles north of L.A. One driver went inside the truck stop, reportedly to get food. The other driver stayed in the cab, but was resting. While the truck was parked, thieves approached the trailer. They broke the lock and the seal, and then quickly removed 24 bags of merchandise. The entire theft took place in under 30 minutes. The thieves vanished without alerting the drivers at all. So they just ran up to the back of the cab, popped that shit.
You're telling me that it took this driver 30 minutes to go get a snack in the gas station?
If you think about it, they're also probably refueling. So I don't know how long it takes to fill up a semi, but I'm assuming it takes a while. So they're probably...
I can't imagine a half hour.
I think it just like half hour, take a little nap, stretch your legs, get some food, take a shit. It takes dudes a long time to shit. So maybe he had
a half an hour.
Under 30 minutes. So I'm assuming like 25 minutes.
Oh, still. I'm rounding up.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Come on. It's a long time to be in a gas station.
Yes.
When the drivers returned to the truck and inspected the trailer, he noticed that the seal was broken. The missing bags were reported immediately. Law enforcement, including the LA County Sheriff's Department, responded to the scene, and the FBI was quickly brought in afterwards. Here's where things get messy. The value of the stolen goods. Brinks initially told reporters the value was about $10 million. The jewelers whose merchandise was stolen insisted it was closer to $100 million. The FBI later suggested the real number was somewhere between $50 million and $100 million.
Okay.
It's still a big chunk of change.
Yeah.
So the issue with kind of the discrepancy is because of insurance values versus
right,
because everyone knows if you've had a car accident or any type of insurance thing that's not like health related, I guess, like
right,
it's they're the trying replacement to steal your shit, value. Basically it's like
yeah
obviously you bought this car for $12,000. Kelly Blue Book says it's $12,000, but we're gonna give you $10,000. It's like
right,
okay, that doesn't make any sense. Anyways,
no.
That was kind of the main dispute between the prices and the price difference, but that's neither here nor there. So authorities have released limited details, but they tried to shed some light. So prosecutors alleged that some of the suspects attended the San Mateo jewelry show and identified the Brinks truck, which if you're casing the joint, it seems pretty obvious, but they then followed the truck south on I-5. They waited until the truck made a predictable stop at the Flying J, a 24-hour truck stop that a lot of people, like truckers, rest at. They had a big parking lot for trucks to go and sleep if they need to. And
right.
We all know what like a Pilot or a Flying J looks like. But
yeah. Yeah.
With one driver inside the store and the other resting, the thieves cut the lock, broke the seal, and removed the bags. Since it was so quick, their escape wasn't even noticed. They just got in there, got out with $50 to $100 million. That's 30 minutes of work for that much money? I don't care if there's 10 people on the job. You're still getting rich.
Yeah. Maybe you'll get into this, but has any of that merchandise reappeared?
We'll get into it. So,
okay.
Theft was immediately reported to the FBI. Investigators reviewed the surveillance footage from the Flying J and nearby businesses. They estimated that the truck's route and timing and cell phone data and license plate reader were analyzed. So they checked all the footage, started checking for cell towers and stuff. And so nearly three years later, in June 2025, federal prosecutors announced a breakthrough. Seven Southern California men were indicted by federal grand jury. Charges included conspiracy to interfere with commerce by robbery, interference with goods and interstate shipment, and two suspects were arrested immediately. One was already serving a prison sentence on unrelated charges. Several others remained at large, though. During the searches of the suspects' homes, and they recovered some of the jewelry, so a lot of it was still missing.
Okay.
Prosecutors alleged that the crew wasn't new to this type of crime. They linked the men to other cargo thefts, including electronics, showing this was part of a larger pattern of organized theft. So I think I talked about it a couple weeks ago, but the YouTube account Tommy G, and
yeah,
he covered this exact thing. So there's crime rings that they break into trains and tractor trailers, all that stuff, and they steal all that shit, and they have fences, and they all get it off, and like,
yeah.
I guess it's a big problem in California that trains get robbed and jacked all the time because they're carrying like Amazon packages and shit like that, and they just hop on the train, steal all that shit, and run off into the train yard. Which I didn't even think, that's like Wild West shit. Like, you go,
it is. That's what I was just thinking. Yeah. Like, train robbing is like the Wild Wild West stuff, where I never would have even thought about train robbings being a current issue.
Yeah. So I'll kind of talk about the aftermath. So a lot of these independent jewelers, because a lot of them are just like mom and pop, like small,
right?
You want to say smaller jewelry stores, but they're still raking in millions of dollars. Like, but that's,
yeah,
the overhead is like a normal business, because it's like, you have to spend a lot to sell for a lot. Like, it's still pretty normal.
It still makes sense.
Yeah.
Right. The margins are the same. It's just the dollar amounts are different.
So insurance, they paid for, like, when it comes to jewelry, a lot of these things are either sentimental or unique. And it's like,
yeah,
especially with the watches, like, there's only a certain amount made. And so you just can't get that watch back anymore if it's rare enough. Like,
right.
And so they didn't quite cover. Because it's like, if someone steals your Honda Civic, there's a million other Honda Civics you can buy. But if someone steals a super rare one of 5,000 Rolex, like, good luck finding another one. And I'm sure you got it for a good price and shit. But like,
makes sense.
So Brinks, they obviously were the focus of a lot of criticism because they're taking 30 minutes in a truck stop.
Right.
But yeah. There's a lot of lawsuits from the jewelers and stuff about that.
100%. I still want to know what that driver was doing. He was not getting a snack. Well,
if you're a truck,
he might have been
getting
a different kind of snack.
Gas stations. Yeah, he found a lot of lizard.
It was a different kind of snack for sure. One that might have required an STD test afterwards. I don't know.
So to understand the significance of this heist, let's compare it to some other famous jewelry heists. The Antwerp diamond heist, often the heist of the century, stole over 100 million of diamonds from a vault in Belgium. I'm going to fuck up this pronunciation. Lufthansa heist in 1978.
Lufthansa, at the JFK probably, airport, maybe.
Mobsters stole about 5 million in cash and 875,000 in jewelry.
Wow.
And another one, the Hatton Garden heist in 2015.
Yes, we
elderly
covered
thieves,
that.
Yeah. Still about 14 million in jewels. So This is a 50 to 100 million is completely insane.
The Hatton Garden heist we covered in episode 55.
Wow, that was a while ago.
It was a long ass time ago. 2 years ago. Over 2 years ago. Yeah, that is wild. I still am like dumbfounded when we've
been doing it for so long.
I know. It's awesome.
But yeah, that's the high. I'm surprised I never heard it because especially that they got indicted in June of this year. Like,
yeah.
How have I never heard of this before? And they stole so much.
And being in Oregon, we often get the news from like
California.
California stuff. Right.
Well, California is so big that everyone gets news on California, but we especially get more of it.
I don't necessarily pay attention to news from the East Coast because I'm nowhere near there. And so I often don't even see it.
And you don't pay attention to the news.
But I don't pay attention. I don't pay attention to the news, period. But for things like millions of dollars, $100 million heist, I'm all over that.
I think the news was focused on Epstein because I think that's when they
maybe
the news is just a distraction. That would have been a good distraction, though. Like, hey, these
that would have been a nice distraction. I would have appreciated that.
Do you have a chaser for us?
I do have a chaser. My chaser is the New York Times games, and that I have become mildly addicted to playing them. The New York Times games are things like Wordle. Yes, I love it.
The domino one's fun.
Pips. Yeah. I love pips. I am all over that.
The only one I'm good at is the strands or connection, or is it strands where you have to
strands where it's like the word search and I feel like I'm decently good at that one because my brain sees in a weird pattern. I will blame Jamie. Shout out to our friend Jamie. She's the one who got me addicted to playing these freaking games. I am a little annoyed that you can only play one game a day, but it's probably better for me and my productivity and in life.
As many as you want.
Yes, but I am super cheap and I'm not going to pay for an app.
And there's enough games that you can
play games.
It takes a while. I just suck at Wordle. I don't like Wordle.
There are times where I get Wordle and I'm like, I swear to God, I didn't cheat. I have to tell Jamie, I didn't cheat. I swear.
I
got it in two.
My vocabulary isn't huge. And since most of the typing I do has autocorrect, I don't know how to spell the words.
You're a bad speller like your dad, huh?
Yeah. I used to be good. I remember I used to be good at it, but all the writing I do has spell check on my phone. When I'm texting, it spells check. When I write emails at work, it has spell check. When I write stories, it has spell check. So I don't know how to spell. Like, if I think about it, I can, but I'm writing so fast that it just kind of, I just suck at Wordle. I'm really good at the connections one. I got a perfect score on once. Like, I think I sent it to you, but. They're not the connections. I suck at the connections one.
Connections is hard. I struggle with connections the most.
It's like, hockey play. I don't watch hockey. I don't know the terms for it and shit like that. You have to be smart to play that one, I feel.
Your dad kicks my ass at connections. And so I will often screenshot to him like all of the words and go, I have wasted two guesses and now I have nothing and I need you to help me. And he will get it almost every time. And it annoys
he seems
the
like he has
crap
the brain
out of me.
That would be good at that. Like,
yeah,
he knows a lot about just random shit and like terms and stuff. So,
yes, but he knows like the hidden thread that binds them together. He can find that.
Yeah.
I cannot. I struggle with it. I'm getting better at it.
I really like the matching one. The matching one I'm so good at. Where it's like tiles and you have to pick the ones that. That one's
I
so
could not
easy
figure that one out. I don't play that one, honestly. I do really Wordle, Connections, Strands, and Pips. I used to do the mini crossword, but they put the mini crossword behind a paywall on my app, so I can't play it anymore.
I suck at crosswords. I can't do Wordle or crosswords, but I'm good at the other ones. I can't do Sudoku very well. I never really, like, I know how to play it. I just always fuck it up somehow. Like,
I like Sudoku. I like that.
You've always liked Sudoku.
Anyway, though. I have. It's a good time waste. What's your chaser today?
So my chaser is actually a watch I just got. So,
I got a new watch?
Yeah, I wasn't a big watch guy for forever. And I got a smartwatch and it was kind of handy because I could like track steps on it. But then it started getting annoying when it would give me notifications from my phone.
Oh.
So I was like,
I turned that shit off.
Well, it was nice at first because then I wouldn't have to look at my phone at work. But then it was like, T-Mobile life, here, enjoy these benefits. I'm like, get the fuck out of. So it was just like my wrist was just vibrating all day and it bugged me. But I found this Casio watch. Casio's a very solid brand. Everybody knows Casio. And it was $35 and it's like a smartwatch without the smartwatch. So it's a digital clock, but it has a world map on it and you can program 4 different time zones, which is pretty handy for my job because I have to contact people on New York time zone and then in the middle of the country. And then also my best friend lives in Hawaii. So I can program when we're trying to play video games. I can just say, I'm going to be on at 6 and then I can just switch over to Hawaii time. Check. That's 3 hours from now. And then go back. I can set alarms and shit. And like, it's
that's
super cool. Only $30. And I see videos online of people. You can like send them to custom watch people and they'll put colors over different sections because it's segmented. There's like the digital clock and the alarm clock and the world map, and you can get different colors like attached to
that's
it.
That's fun.
But it's a really cool watch. Cool. I'm happy with the third. Has a 10-year battery. We'll see if that actually works. Ooh. But
okay, nice. But yeah, that's cool.
Cool little watch. I like it. For $30. Can't complain. Well, I think that just about brings us to the end of this episode. Sorry again if it the audio is all fucked up. We're still trying to figure this shit out. Now that I'm looking at it, it looks all fucked up. So we'll see. Sorry if it sucks.
Oh, no. Sometimes. This might be 160-something whatever episode, but we still have technical difficulties. So
neither one of us know how to work computers. Good. So I'm sorry, everybody. All right. Love you, Mom. Thanks for listening.
Love you, bud.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.